97.5, The Fanatic.
Oh, the other team that's killing this fan base is in a must-win situation. And even if they win this game, we're looking at maybe a 1-5 start. And who expected that? He's the man that covers the Eagles for ESPN.com. He is the great Tim McManus on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. Hello, Timmy. Things are not very joyous in Eagleville.
No, and then a turn for the worse on the health front for the Eagles with Jalen Reagor going to be sidelined for a significant amount of time here, Mike, with a UCL tear in his thumb. The Eagles are referencing Drew Brees as a similar injury and similar timeline for his absence. Brees missed 6 weeks or 5 games. I have one source telling me that he's expecting Reagor to be sidelined until after the bye week. This is a guy that recovered quickly from the last injury he had. He was supposed to be out 4 weeks, returned in 2. So I guess we throw that caveat in there. But he's going to have surgery. He's going on IR, and that's not great for the quarterback, who's obviously having his own struggles.
Yes. So what do they do to replace him now? What's up their sleeve, maybe?
In the very short term, they just have to go with what they've got. And that is, people aren't going to love the name, but J.J. Arcega-Whiteside and John Hightower are two names that are kind of right in line there. I mean, they can rely. They're already the heaviest two tight end personnel team in the entire NFL. They're going to have to rely on that even more. They can't really play the long-term card with DeSean Jackson, no 50% of the snap stuff. You know, they have to have him very active in games. And then kind of off in the not-too-distant future is Alshon Jeffery. They didn't put him on PUP to start the year because they thought he'd be back within 6 weeks of the start of the season. We're in week 3 right now, so I mean, somewhere within the next couple games, at least according to their original timeline, they were expecting to get Jeffery back, but Jeffery not practicing today.
Interesting that Jeffery's the forgotten man, and all of a sudden he may be looked at as the guy that really has to be their savior here. Very, very ironic. Let's talk about what everybody's talking about, and it's the quarterback and how he's playing and what they're doing to coach him and whether there's a disconnect between the coach and this quarterback. I mean, spin all this for me with Carson Wentz.
Well, I mean, the one thing that has become really clear to me is that the fluidness of the relationship between Doug Peterson and Nick Foles, how easy it was for them to sort of get on the same page and play to one another's strengths. We're not seeing that develop with Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz. That doesn't mean that it can't develop, but it's just hard to ignore the facts right now that these guys just do not seem to mesh up with any type of consistency. And so, you know, that's kind of a pressing issue in my mind. I mean, if you look at what Wentz has done since that magical run in 2017, you know, he's 14-15 now, Mike, as a starter. We've seen these inconsistencies in his game. We've seen things that were like rookie issues that have continued here into year 5 and have still not getting cleaned up. And it's still kind of hard to truly identify what his system is. You know, it was like you knew what it was with Foles and Peterson. You did the high level of the RPOs, that kind of thing. But where is the sweet spot with Wentz? And that's something that they've yet to land on.
Well, what's the problem that they can't seem to get on the same page? I mean, is the head coach able to adjust? Is the quarterback able to do what the head coach wants to do? And what's the snag here?
I mean, it's a $100,000 question as to why it hasn't manifested itself as of yet. I think that, you know, we can look at different coaching styles. Like if you look at 2017 as an example, they had a really nice setup where they had John DeFilippo, the quarterback's coach, was kind of the bad cop, and they had Frank Reich, who was the good cop, and Peterson, you know, kind of managing the whole deal. And Wentz was clearly responsive to that when he got coached really hard and then lifted up. I mean, whatever kind of combination that they had going there worked for him. And so why isn't it happening now? You know, he's gotten more, I think, authority and influence over the offense as he's gone along. And there's that tricky balance of empowering the quarterback and then making sure that he's coloring within the lines and that you are guiding him appropriately. And, you know, I know that there's efforts being made to that extent, but I just don't know that they've landed on it yet, Mike. I mean, so this is a work in progress, but it becomes concerning because you're at, in the fifth year, and you would think that these things would be ironed out by this point.
You know, I like to put two and two together, and one of the things we've been talking about for the last couple of days is that in their mind, in their organizational mind, they would be willing to move on from Carson Wentz. And that comes from the drafting itself of Jalen Hurts. But also, the other day he says, when asked the question, what's the reason for his regression? He says, that's a good question. Now, I don't know if any coach would answer it that way without supporting his quarterback, who's so much of his team. And he just, you know, instead of saying, well, I don't agree that he's regret, he said, that's a good question. Now, I mean, what are we supposed to read into there?
Yeah, I mean, you're getting to this kind of fundamental question of, you know, if somebody were to go, who would it be? And I don't think we're quite there yet. And then I thought that Peterson kind of readjusted during today's press conference and was sure to kind of back his quarterback up. Mm-hmm. So maybe he went a little bit too far one direction. Now he's making amends. But I would also say that while, you know, there are legit concerns here, you know, that everyone is expressing, it's also important to have kind of the bigger picture that Wentz isn't going to be this bad all season, you wouldn't think.
Mm-hmm.
And that what he did capture something down the stretch last year that was real and meaningful and seemed to have an effect on his teammates and his standing in the locker room. Now let's see if they come rallying around him and whether he can get it straightened out.
You know, the head coach has been kind of snippy lately, and the personality's changed a little bit. And, you know, today it was, I played and you didn't. Is this what he getting to him a little bit?
He goes to that card too frequently, in my opinion. I mean, that's often he'll go, and that's never a good answer for a coach. It just never has gotten any coach anytime into a good place in terms of the public standing. Yeah, I think that some of that maybe was the phrasing of the question, where the term layup seemed to trigger him.
Yeah,
like there is no layup in this league, and,
right.
You know. But the other part is, yeah, maybe he is feeling the heat. And, of course, we didn't know about the Reger injury until afterwards.
Yeah.
So he's dealing with some things behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And also, I think he's trying to show some support for the quarterback and kind of paint it in a picture like this isn't easy, you know, and that there's things that they're working on.
Last thing, the defense, which we thought was going to be a staple, has not been. And, I know Schwartz tried to take a bullet, but he did kind of single out some guys. What's the disarray with this defense right now?
I thought that he struck the right tone, generally speaking, and kind of outlined the fact that he tried to simplify the defense, and that ended up blowing up on him because the guys, instead of having their eyes singularly focused, it was more kind of general, whatever happens, you know, we're prepared for, and that just turned out to be a disaster for them. So I thought that there was grains of truth to what he was saying, and I also thought that he was very much just trying to shelter them from a lot of the criticism. And, you know, there are some fundamental problems with this defense right now. One is that they haven't invested any resources in linebacker. I mean, we know that. They are number 32 in the NFL and resources invested in a linebacker in 2020. And it shows up, you know, it showed up big time in that mismatch against the linebackers and Higby last week. And then the defensive front is really has to be kind of the center of this entire team, let alone the defense. They need to get that pressure. They spent a lot of money, a lot of resources on the big man up front to get pressure. And now you have Fletcher Cox dealing with an oblique injury. He got hurt in that game. He had a kind of like a wrap around his stomach area. You know, in between series throughout that game, Mike, he was sidelined today with that oblique. He's officially day-to-day, but maybe that helps explain why we haven't seen the Fletcher Cox that people are expecting to see. And if you don't have that, you know, now it's putting pressure on guys who haven't proven themselves yet, guys like Derek Barnett as an example. You know, so, yeah, there are some issues, not to mention you have a cornerback playing safety in Jalen Mills. So there's a lot to hash out here, but the bottom line is that they have to get their act together like now, because they need to put this rookie down quickly this week, make sure he doesn't get some confidence that could take him to a win and the Eagles into an 0-3 hole.
They did address the linebacker with a third round pick, but apparently they addressed linebackers that aren't ready to play in the NFL yet. Is that kid going to see the field
as a special teamer? But they didn't really have plans of him being a contributor on defense this year. And it is absolutely right to question the decision-making by the front office and Howie Roseman in that case. Because Jalen Hurts supposed to be a guy that you're really not going to use except for in some like packages here and there on the field. So you didn't get Carson Wentz help otherwise. And then Davion Taylor, they weren't really expecting anything from him this year. That's your second and your third round pick. I mean, and you look and what one of the major issues on this team is that they haven't gotten enough out of their draft picks. And now, you know, the first round pick that they actually were relying on is going to be sidelined for multiple weeks. And so it's a problem.
Yeah. Howie Roseman didn't play in the NFL, right? Does Doug know that? Okay, you pass that on to Doug. All right, listen, man, good stuff. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you.
All right, Mike, sounds good.
Tim McManus, covering the Eagles for ESPN.com with Comcast Business Hotline.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Jason Stark, they're killing me. Let's bring him in. He's the man who covers baseball for The Athletic. He's in the Hall of Fame. He is Mr. Baseball, and he's going to explain this melting. Jason Stark, brought to us by DraftKings. Jason, I can't explain it, so I'll let you do it.
Mike, people don't seem too upbeat around here today.
No.
I don't know. Just like one of my theories is all Phillies seasons have one thing in common. They just last a little too long. Other than 2008 and 1980, they all last too long, and especially this one, right?
Boy, these Septembers are just hard to take, and in conjunction with the Eagles, people are just miserable, and they lose last night again, and working somebody. It's almost like a passion play of some sort. Like there's some kind of script. You know, it's a Shakespearean tragedy. A Cuban defector comes up and bangs a home run to win the game.
Yeah, it's part of the experience of being a Philadelphian. You know, I don't know why people in our town have to be put through this, but what they lived through yesterday, I don't know what you think. That felt like one of the all-time Philadelphia sports debacles. You know, just one of those days we'll look back on for a long time. This is as bad as it can get. You think about all that went into it, right? You have Nola lined up against a guy with a 7 ERA. And also, by the way, the worst strikeout rate of any starter in the big leagues, and they lose. Like the day before, you had Zach Wheeler lined up against another guy with a 7 ERA and lose that game. And then the way the game ends last night, wow. Just a disaster.
It is just unbelievable. And now, listen, they still have a chance. Things have to go right. They have to sweep. They have to get help. The whole thing. They may be able to sneak in. But the way this has gone, the front office has just been a colossal failure on things they've tried to do. Now, I know guys are hurt right now, but those trades that they tried to improve their bullpen have failed, and it's about time that this front office gets evaluated. Do you agree harshly by the owner?
I don't know how you cannot evaluate it. If you really take in what's happened, I do understand that the last 2 weeks and the injuries they've dealt with the level of player who's had to deal with them, like that's rough. That's tough for any team to deal with. But I don't know how you can escape the reality that the number one culprit in all of this is roster construction. You know, having no outfield depth, so you can't cover an injury to Kyle Garlick, not to mention Harper, Jay Bruce, McCutcheon. Not sure how that happens. And then having no pitcher you can call up to even start a game through all these doubleheaders. Calling up one reliever after another. And the only guy who looks like he belongs in the big leagues has been JoJo Romero. And this is on a team that's used 28 pitchers. And I keep coming back to the same thing in my head. It's hard. It's a weird season. But remember, you have a 60-player pool, which means you have more players actually at the alternate site than on your big league team. So the lack of depth and the lack of options here has just been hard to believe.
Yeah, the axe has to fall. I mean, they knew the axe had to fall in Capitol last year. The owner knows the axe has to fall in this regime now. They just failed. They had a chance to do it. Maybe it was novel when they hired him, but it didn't work. The McPhail-Klentak experiment did not work. And so I expect that will change in the offseason, barring a miracle that they get into the playoffs and they actually do something here.
Well, I mean, look, it's hard to know exactly what John Middleton's thinking, but I do think that, you know, recent history has shown he's very aware of what the fan base thinks, of what people like us think. He's not just in his bubble. He's very conscious of perception in the town. So maybe that's a factor. Maybe it's not. You've alluded a couple times to the idea that they still could sneak in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see it now. Their playoff odds on Fangraphs have gone from 85% to 33% just since Sunday. And one of the big reasons is, you know, I actually said this to you last week. They're going to win every tiebreaker because they have this great division record, and that's the tiebreaker. And then they go ahead and lose 5 in a row to the Mets and Nationals. So now they lose almost every tiebreaker. And here's what that means. I think 30 and 30 doesn't get you in anymore. So they have to go 4-0, which means they have to sweep the Rays at home. And is that possible? Mike, you know how many series the Rays have lost at home this season? Want to guess?
None?
None. Not one.
Yeah. Listen, it's a pipe dream. So, but mathematically, I guess they're still in it. So, the manager has kind of escaped criticism all year, and I can see why. But I was just curious to know what you saw and what others may have said about his bullpen moves last night. Where looking at the charts, it says Morgan does pretty well against Michael A. Taylor, but he went conventional and he went righty on righty, and it backfired.
He had a reasonable answer for that. He's in a bullpen game. He is trapped in these rules now that say every reliever has to face 3 hitters. And so when he explained it afterward, that was clearly what he meant, that he needed to match up Jojo Romero with Soto, and that's what that dictated when Phelps came in. But I think that's obviously a situation where if he had it back, he wouldn't have done what he did.
Yeah.
Because it didn't work out. It was a mess. It was a game-changing, as it turned out, game-losing mess.
Last question, Real Muto. A very peculiar answer was given by Klentak a few days ago. He said, well, he basically said, well, we got him for 2 years of control. And that doesn't sit well with fans who thought they were going to actually lock him up. Who knows what this regime is whether they're going to survive. But where do you think the JT Realmuto thing goes?
Well, look, a lot's been made of that answer. Probably more has been made of it than it actually means. To a great extent, that really is just the way that Matt answers questions like that. A couple things here. First, the decision on whether JT stays here, signs here, that's going to be a John Middleton decision, right? That's not going to be a Matt Klentak decision.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the decisions along the way have been Matt Klentak decisions. And that is the problem, right? Because, John Middleton was telling people after they made the trade that the number one priority was to get this guy signed. Number one. And now it's almost 2 years later and still hasn't happened. he never jumped in to make it happen, and I think that's because he left that, for the most part, up to Andy McPhail and Matt Klentak. And I think one of the most fateful decisions, when we look back on it, was taking this guy to arbitration last winter. Why? Right? I know he has said all the right things. Right? I know that JT has said that doesn't mean anything. Here's a little factoid to keep in mind. In the last 30 years, there has not been a single player who was in his final year of arbitration, went to a hearing, lost that hearing, and then re-signed with that team. Not one. So this guy's going to test the market, and a lot of forces outside of John Middleton's control and the front office's control will be in play when that happens. They had to head that off. They did not.
Well, that's really interesting. And, we have to move on here. But quickly, if John Middleton made that the number one priority, then I hear his excuse that he was going to leave it up to Klentak. He could have come in at any point. If he saw was slogging along, he could have pushed the button on it. So I'm not going to let him off the hook for that.
Right. The next time he speaks publicly, that's a question that we're going to have to ask him.
All right. Jason, great stuff. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you up the road.
Hang in there, Mike.
All right. Jason Stark, brought to us by DraftKings.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, let's talk some football. With normally we have the Tuesdays with Sal, but we moved it over to Wednesday today. And of course, the great Sal Palantonio, ESPN's number one football reporter, is brought to us by Parks Casino and Sportsbook, Pennsylvania's number one casino. Well, Sal Pal, it's trouble in Philadelphia with the football team.
Michael, how does 0-2 feel to you?
Believe me, people are going crazy here. It's bitter, it's ugly, it's like there's no uplifting situation right now in Philly sports, and the Eagles are adding to it.
Oh, well, I've been listening, and I hear from my friends, I hear from everybody. You know, they've had great success under Doug Peterson, won the Super Bowl, he's never been 0-2 before. This was completely unexpected considering how the team ended the season last year, particularly how Carson Wentz ended the season last year. Going 4-0, I realize he was hurt in the playoff game, but he had a tremendous end to the season, and no one anticipated this. Count me in, that group, I did not anticipate this.
Well, explain to me the Wentz thing, if you can, and then explain to me the dynamic between the quarterback and the coach, which seems to be interesting right now.
Yeah, Michael, see, we're very limited now because we have no access to the players or the coaches. Other than through text. And that's extremely limited. This is the first time that's ever happened. You can't go into the locker room after the game. You can't go on the field before the game. You can't go into the locker room during the week. So it's very difficult as a reporter to ascertain the truth. There's a lot of theories out there. And I can test a couple of the theories out with you. I've talked to a lot of people about them. How does Wentz go from 4-0 and carry an undermanned team into the postseason to 0-2, where he's already thrown half as many interceptions as he had all last season? He's constantly fumbling the ball. And here's the troubling number for me, and I'm sure you've heard a litany of statistics all weekend long and for the first 2 days of this week. Mike, he's got 20 off-target throws. That's most in the NFL. 15 of them, 15 of the 20, are with a clean pocket, not under duress, not under pressure.
Yeah. That's not good.
No. So, you know, I've asked a lot of experts to look at him on film because, you know, I'm not a quarterback coach. And they say his footwork is off, or that he's rushing throws, that he just looks like, you know, he can't hit an open guy, like a Chuck Knoblauch situation.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he's just got a little bit of the, you know, yip, a little bit.
Yeah.
And then the poor decision-making, that interception in the end zone, throws it into double coverage. Mike, throws it into double coverage late. And it's a poor decision to begin with on a first down. So let's go through the theories. One, he's coming off a concussion. He doesn't want to move out of the pocket. That's theory number one. That's very troubling. Theory number two is he's got coaching by committee, no offensive coordinator. He's got Morningwig, Scangarella, and Press Taylor, and Doug Peterson. He's got four guys. And when you have a committee, you don't have accountability. That's something that could be looked at. He's obviously under serious pressure in the first game. Maybe in the second game, he was seeing stuff that wasn't there. That's a possibility. So there's a lot, you know. And then I'm not crazy about the wide receiver situation. That's another thing. But he overcame that at the end of last year. So I'm looking to validate one of these theories and see where it takes us. But right now, they have dug in their heels and have said, we're going to fix this. We believe in ourselves. We haven't lost confidence.
Well, that's all well and good. And now let's talk about the relationship here, because, you know, it was a very peculiar answer that when he was asked the question, how come Carson has regressed? And the head coach said, that's a good question. So, in other words, he's giving credence to it, which you don't find many coaches give credence to. Is there a problem between these two men as far as getting on the same page?
I don't think that there is. I know them both very well. I communicate with Doug a lot, and I don't think that they have a communication problem, and I don't think that they have a relationship problem. So I don't think that that's one of the answers. Now, he's as perplexed as a lot of people who are watching Carson. Sure. I mean, if he doesn't have an answer, I think Doug is telling the truth. Doug, you know, I think he's as perplexed as everybody else. You know, he gave that answer about the pandemic, you know, and that was silly. And that, to me, was not only didn't it resonate with fans, it had no confidence once it left his lips with anybody who is listening in the media. But if you're a player on that team, what are you saying? Right? What are you saying? You're saying that Carson has got a problem that everybody else doesn't have. Everybody's going through the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, Mike, it's all these guys, and this should not be undersold, and that could be part of the theory, believe me, because these guys are getting tested every single day. Now, people who are getting tested that much, there's a lot of stress. It's literally like rolling the dice. It's Russian roulette. You don't know what the result is going to be. You don't know what you've been exposed to. Just imagine every day you wake up and you have to be COVID tested every single day in order to go to work. And if you test positive, bang, you're out. 14 days on the shelf, and then you got to test negative two or three times before you come back to work. That's serious stress level. And these guys have been tested every single day since the end of July. Every player, every coach, every staff member in Tier 2. And I know there's stress because I've talked to coaches about it. Not players, because we don't have access to players.
Well, let's look at the possible game plan tweaks that they can make. Because, we looked at the first game, and I just thought that it was ridiculous. They didn't really try anything different to get him out of the pocket or to draw plays, screen plays, whatever. Why are they afraid to get him out of the pocket like before when he, you know, was kind of playing with more abandon?
It's dumb, and I don't know why, and they need to fix it. If you look at the Rams and how that was designed by Sean McVay. Now, I'm not a big Sean McVay guy. You know, I've come on this show and said, oh, Sean McVay, coach of the year. Mm-hmm. Doug Peterson beat his brains with no problem in L.A. twice, okay, and with the backup quarterback. So Doug has had his number. And then Sean McVay just comes out and says, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to roll the guy out, and we're going to have three levels of options. Now, you go back and look at it. Even if you look at it on TV, you can see he's got an underneath route, he's got a middle route and a deep route, and in most cases, all three were open. All because Goff was on the run. When Goff was on the out of the pocket, now you got to dedicate a hat to Goff, whether it's a linebacker or a safety. The same thing should be doing with Carson Wentz.
Yeah, I don't know. Are you talking to Doug about that? Has he said anything to you about that?
It's simple. Yeah, it's simple. Everybody's talking to him about it. But again, you don't have an offensive coordinator. You've got a passing game coordinator, and you got two consultants in Morningwig and Scangarella. So take that for what it's worth. You don't have a guy who's designing every single week and says, this is my design, this is my imprint, this is what we're doing with this
guy. Does the head coach think that's faulty? Or obviously he doesn't.
We haven't asked him about that. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We have not asked him about that. Definitely not. But you could also see what happened on the other side of the ball. Mike, there's a lot of blame to spread around.
Mm-hmm.
On Sunday, what did McVay do? He attacked those linebackers like crazy. He absolutely went after him. He looked at the tape of the first game and said, these guys can't tackle. They can't go sideline to sideline.
Yeah.
If I give him a face mask full of my big back, I'm going to run right through him.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to the third level, Malcolm is not there. He's not coming through the door anytime soon. You got Jalen Mills, who's less experienced, smaller, and just not the leader on defense that Malcolm Jenkins was.
Well, all right.
The team's 0-2, and you know people are saying what happens on Sunday against the Bengals. Well, they got to win the game, and people are saying, well, you know, they got to cover in order to really convince anybody. No, they don't. They just got to win a game because you know they're not going to go to San Francisco and win.
No, we're looking at 1-5. Even if they win the game,
so they just got to win the game and try to get some confidence and identity in what they do. And then make a trip across the country and see what happens.
All right. Sal, pal, always a pleasure. Good to talk to you on Wednesday.
Yeah, what's a Wednesday?
Wednesday's with Sal.
Yeah, once in a while. We'll stick a Wednesday in there.
We'll talk to you next week.
Sorry to talk to you.
Sal, pal, brought to us by Parks Casino and Sportsbook, Pennsylvania's number one casino.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.